Oh, the dancing music to start off with. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Dr. Tim Slecker, Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, and yes, chairman of the board, Jacob. It is a Friday, and you know what that means, Johnny Lupinacci. Jacob is in charge. We are now guests on our own show. And Jacob, I'm going to hand it over to you, my friend.
For Choo Choo producer, Jacob's Choice, chairman of the board. Ow!
You now have two choices.
Chairman of the board, Jacob.
Ow! Jacob, chairman of the board.
I bet the board is spelled B-O-R-E-D.
We choose to go to the moon.
Life's full of tough choices, isn't it?
You chose poorly.
It's a Friday once again.
Hey, dudes.
Whoa.
I'm glad that you could be here.
Thank you for allowing us this opportunity, Jacob.
Did you like that new It's a Friday once again clip I'm trying to work into the program?
I like that. You know, you are magical with the, the bringing things in, weaving them together, making them sound, oh, that is magic, Jacob.
Well, thank you
very
much.
That's why we call him chairman of the board.
Yeah. It's a chairman, not because he's got a nice chair. He is the chairman of the board. Okay, Jacob, what do you got for us today? I point out every Friday, I spend Thursday nights in bed with a little bit of a kind of a twitch and a concern because you never know. Johnny.
One of many worries of the week consists of what's gonna be on producer Jacob's choice.
Well, there's nothing to worry about, Tim. You're in great hands, as always, here on this Producer's Choice show. Very exciting. I hope you studied up on this. So we all know that the Chinese Civil War ended in 1949 with the nationalist Kuomintang fleeing to Taiwan. Now, after Chiang Kai-shek died in 1979, his son, Chiang Ching-kuo, took over as dictator. The question, guys, very simple. Do you think that Chiang Ching-kuo was correct to democratize Taiwan in the 1980s in response to Deng Xiaoping's reforms in mainland China, or did he make a mistake?
Wow. Johnny Lupinacci.
I'm just kidding, guys. That's not what we're talking about today. No, we don't do that nerd stuff on the Producer's Choice show. Not even close. I want to take you guys back to not ancient Chinese history of the 20th century. I want to go back to Tim and Johnny's history of the 20th century. And I want to talk about your time, not as educators, but as students.
All right.
It's a big reverse.
Love that.
So, starting off with you, Johnny Lupinacci, tell me, what was a good experience you had as a student, and what did that teach you that you brought over to being an educator?
Oh, man, I was just talking about this the other day. I had a pretty amazing high school experience. I went to a unique kind of high school. Maybe some listeners out there can share some solidarity. I went to an all-boys prep school. We talked about that when we talked about our favorite movies, Carpe Diem, right? Dead Poets Society resonated with me well. But I was just talking with my daughter who hates PE. I mean, she abhors PE class. And it's really different out here in Washington, where she goes to an amazing public school, but they have co-ed PD. And while I'm all for like PE and like equal opportunity, I'm not ever making the case that female identifying students shouldn't have PE class or that they can't compete at the same level as their male counterparts. I just remember kind of the tensions we had as students, at least back in the 80s and early 90s when I was in middle and high school. And we had separate gendered PE class. I really have fond memories of PE. And Jacob, one of my most favorite experiences was the high school I went to. They had a required PE credit every semester. It wasn't just like once during your high school or 1 year of it. We had every semester. And I was saying I loved having 0 hour calisthenics and then a PE class. And you could have general PE or you could take wrestling or you could have boxing, or you could have weight training. There were a number of options and electives. Again, one of these prep schools was very athletics focused, high academics, but also very athletics focused. And I had some really great like PE and health teachers. There were also some of them coaches. And I loved my PE and health credits. And so, Jacob, that was a really positive experience for me to build into my lifelong skills, you know, working out every day, getting moving, playing games and activities that were somewhat competitive, but you didn't need to be an expert, right? I was never a great basketball player, but I'd play a fair amount of somewhat organized basketball through PE credits. And we were always in shape as students together. And, you know, as young people, we were burning off energy. We were moving around because you don't have recess when you get to a certain age. So, you know, it was a memory of mine in high school, middle school was, you know, not having to just sit down all day, but having consistent movement and great teachers who kind of kept us playing games. And, you know, and I attribute a lot of my health now as an almost 50-year-old teacher. I attribute a lot of my health to, you know, those habits I developed, you know, in PE, the health habits, and then the, you know, constant moving and being able to work out and start your morning with some stretches and some calisthenics. And certainly that's toned down quite a bit to some minor movement. But, you know, I believe those years really helped my health now as a, you know, an aging old voice.
Wow.
Well, John, one more thing I just wanted to ask. So you really were inspired by that active, just not just in class, but a lifestyle of activity and being an active person. Can you give us an example of just when you're as an educator, how do you bring that into the classroom with you?
Well, yeah, man, I just don't expect that students should be sitting down the whole time they're in my class or just all day long. Like when I was a high school teacher, it was really important to me also as a coach to involve as many students as possible, not just my own athletes, but all students in either intramural athletics or other activities, just big group workouts, you know, having that before school or, you know, your off hour after school before math tutoring. You could go lift, you know, you could engage in some burning off some energy also while we're going to attach some learning to it. So definitely influenced my classrooms. One of my math classrooms, Jacob, I got a grant to have, again, building off of class and session on Wednesday, a grant to have, you know, alternate energy exploration in my science and math classroom through a row of bikes we had in the back of the class. And everyone back then, YouTube wasn't as popular as it was now, but it was starting to really take off. And I would say, hey, if we want to watch some sports highlights or you want to elect to have some YouTube, we got to ride bikes in the back of class after the lesson. If you finish with your practice problems and you help at least one person, you can hop on a bike and you can build up some energy, and the energy powered our projector. And we'd watch, you know, for 15, 20 seconds of, you know, Sports Center or some kind of athletics clips. on YouTube. So, I mean, that's just a little bit of like, you know, kind of always trying to go with the flow and not against it. You know, having students have opportunity to be moving, you know, movement is part of how we not only learn just our stuff up here in our brains, but how we, you know, develop life habits and get our bodies, you know, acclimated to constantly, you know, being ready to move. It's just a good skill. We don't want to always be sedentary.
Absolutely. And something I like about that, and I'm going to make a note of this, we're not going to talk about it today, but I've heard a lot of discussion in the education space about how do teachers best deal with young men in the classroom, in high school, middle school, whatever, and behavioral issues if they're not being met with what they need. And that anybody can enjoy hopping on a bike, but especially I think with young boys and young men, having that, you know, that sort of competitive atmosphere, or that, hey, if we get things done, we can hop on those bikes, we can watch a little Sports Center, things like that. That might be worth doing a show on at some point, getting into those intricacies, because I think sometimes, I mean, those strategies that you're talking about, Johnny, not even purposeful maybe, but those things really do help. Tim,
absolutely,
I want to hear,
man.
Same question to you. Going back, way back into history when Tim was a student rather than an educator, what was a good experience you had and how did that help inform you as a teacher?
Man, I don't know. Johnny put me on a on the spot there. It's so, so deep and memorable. He had there an experience. No, no.
What do you like? Gym class.
Wait, you could have said all that in that. No, you know, one of my, I actually have probably, you know, lots of them, on top of lots of really horrible experiences shaped me as an educator. Good experience.
Hey, Jacob said the good ones.
I know.
Jacob said the good ones.
Fourth grade, Mr. Lawrence, my first male teacher, 1977, probably it was. Mr. Lawrence at that time too, if you knew about, you know, the style and the fashion at that time, Mr. Lawrence had a permed afro. He was not a person of color. He was, you know, and had that permed afro.
He was just a person of style.
He was, well, yeah, you know, he had the John Travolta shoes on, the dancing shoes, and no, he was just, he was one of those, he was a cool guy. He gave a different take to what it meant to experience an educator. So for me, it was an inspiration. I mean, he would do things like, you know, get visibly frustrated with us to a point though that it didn't become as if we hurt his feelings in a way. There wasn't the guilt associated with it that I'm kind of gender stereotyping there, but a lot of the you know, teachers up to that point, when they were upset with you, there was more of a prevalent technique of some form of shame. Mr. Lawrence was just pissed, and he'd take a couple steps across the front of the room, turn and just let go of a piece of chalk against the wall, and that piece of chalk would hit the wall and blow up into a cloud of dust. And man, we were like, all right, we better shut up. and we were there. And so there was something real about him, but there was also a part though that really came across. You know, maybe for a boy like me, that gender change in fourth grade to have this man who, you know, really was more of kind of like a figure of respect, who was real. He talked to us in ways that I genuinely felt that he saw us as little people as opposed to little kids. I mean, I felt like a real person there. And that experience, I mean, really left a lasting impression on me to kind of, I guess, model that as I became a teacher myself. You know, throwing that in there too, one other teacher, boy, and I had incredibly great female teachers too, but just pointing out, you know, here, Mr. Rush, going with Johnny's great phys ed and health teacher. You know, talk about a great name for a gym teacher, Mr. Rush.
Yeah, I love it.
You know, but he did one thing where it was, you know, he picked me to be gym teacher for the day. And, you know, it wasn't because, you know, again, at that point, what, maybe 4'2", 4'2"? I don't know. I'm only 5'7" now. Wasn't, you know, that great, amazing athlete, but I, you know, I was coordinated, and he said, you know, I think that you have a sense of, what did he say? He's like, you have a presence in phys ed class, and I'd, you know, like you to be teacher for the day. And that experience of being gym teacher for the day, I think it was seventh grade, Woodlawn Middle School. You know, that trust, maybe that's what it was too. It was a trust, again, a kind of a treatment of me as a person and not a child in need of, you know, discipline being challenged in ways to make me understand that the world, you know, isn't going to be easy out there, Slicker. It was just this opportunity to engage and be a teacher and be treated like, again, a person as opposed to a student in need of some form of correction or some form of needing to be taught something. It was giving me an opportunity to actually demonstrate some leadership. And what a great learning opportunity to have to plan a phys ed class for my peers in seventh grade. Not an easy time to be any type of child, middle school, you know, kind of rough at that point. But so Mr. Lawrence, Mr. Rush, those two experiences, and I think what it comes down to is that they both saw me and my classmates as people, and they had relationships with us that valued us as people. And I'm going to tell you that I bet that most of my classmates who experienced those teachers would say the same thing. Mr. Rush was great. He'd come in, you know, brought in his cross or compound bow during hunting season, would show it to us, you know, he'd be out there. Just a real guy who had no problem sharing with us what he did on his off time. So I think it was that. It was just the expression of them of being real. And then I'll put that across any other teacher I've ever had throughout all of my experience. It's those teachers, female, male, for sure, crawling across. It's that sense of how they see the people in front of them as, again, whether it's fourth grade, kindergarten, my own aunt, Mrs. Slecker, they treated us like individual people who we had our own thoughts and our own ways of being, and they brought out the best in us. So, boy, that talk about a kind of melodramatic, like, whoa, Tim, that's not very exciting. It was, though. Those were great experiences, and I used those experiences as the models for how I wanted to become and be a teacher when I got that opportunity to stand in front of little people myself.
I, Tim, I think anything with a compound bow is a pretty exciting story.
Yes,
so
exactly.
I don't sell yourself short on that. It's interesting to me that I really didn't intend for this conversation to go in that direction in any way, but Johnny, with your story and then Tim talking about, you know, that memory that sticks out to you so prominently as being, oh, your first male teacher as a kid is something worth noting or something that had an impact on you. You hear guys like Scott Galloway or Jonathan Haidt, they talk about, you know, rudderless young boys and men. Maybe there is something there to talk about. I would be interested to kind of delve into that more if we found the right way to do it. But yeah.
We should do a class and session on it, Jacob. Put it in the books, because it is a researched and documented phenomenon in education. And it's often, especially in this particular political climate we're in, one that's been frowned upon more recently. But, you know, for a better part of a decade or more, there were concerted efforts to make teaching more diverse. It's predominantly younger white women. And so I'll extend that, you know, that experience Tim has extends to, like, say, like a Latino young woman having a Latina teacher is incredibly inspirational, you know, for a young Black boy to have, you know, a Black male teacher has a massive impact on how they see themselves in the future, much like Tim shared. So there was a really strong concerted effort to make sure that kids in this country had really diverse representation and who were their teachers over their, say, 12 plus years of being in a classroom. I'd like to believe that still exists and those efforts are there, but that falls under that DEI stuff that politically is, you know, kind of frowned upon, at least by this particular funding administration.
But what Jacob, though, too, on that, you know, kind of in one, I follow Scott Galloway, Prof G, a lot. In fact, you know what, Jacob, there you go. Like, put out an invitation to Prof G, get him on. You know, we'll have a whole Saturday show with Scott Galloway. But yeah, rudderless boys, right? Yeah. That idea is, you know, there's something there, right? And by acknowledging that, that doesn't then take away from Johnny's bigger picture of recognizing that all children, different ways, you know, need that kind of Yeah, a model that gives them an ability to see themselves. I do think, though, that Galloway and Haidt are onto something by really talking about young boys, particularly right now. And boy, let's dig into that one day. You know, it might be semi-politically incorrect to talk about men and boys having problems, but the other deeper research on that is that you know, when it comes to any type of depressions or anxieties, men tend to go inwards in ways that are very unhealthy. And so, you know, as we're thinking about that, you know, our teachers are role models, potentially a way to kind of help move that in a direction that doesn't just, again, create a real problem in, you know, the future of rudderless young boys and men when they become adults and the realities that are there. But a little bit of a U-turn there, Jacob, but I appreciate the reference to Prof. G, because I've actually listened to quite a few of his interviews with Jonathan Haidt.
I think it's an important subject, especially because young boys and young men, they can be capable of doing some very good things in the world. But if left to fester or not given proper guidance, they can also do a lot of bad things in the world. So I think it's something important for men, and it's something important for women too, that young boys and young men are given a good education and given the proper ability to grow. Now, speaking of this subject that we're on right now, a couple of young boys you two used to be, I wanted to ask you the inverse question from where we started. Tim, what was a bad experience you had as a student that taught you something that you brought over to being an educator?
Mr. Labetta, 10th grade algebra. Jacob, I'm gonna make it very clear and simple to you. As Mr. Labetta pointed out, there is the right way to do algebra. There is the wrong way to do algebra. There is Labetta's way to do algebra. The right way is wrong. The wrong way is wrong. The only right way is Labetta's way.
This sounds like a good experience.
No, I what that, you know, guess what? Anytime I had any challenge in math, and Johnny knows, I've talked about it, you know, my math experience was horrible. And that was just one way, again, of cementing there's only one way. In fact, the funny part was, truly, if you got the right answer using your own way of figuring out, it was wrong. And so think about how that actually, you know, lands for creating, you know, an interest at that time in math and algebra is that, well, crap, if I can't even figure it out the right way and the right way is wrong, you know what? Well, then, heck, somebody else can do this math crap. I got to get out of here, man. So, that's to me, and that is an example of lots of ways that I think teachers approach teaching and learning that shut me down and I think shuts kids down everywhere is that concept of, you know, you're going to do it my way. I'm going to show you the, you know, not only the right way, but the right way. Mm. And boy, you know, again, for all those people that understood Labetta's way, they're like, you know, great. But for all of us who sat there going, I don't get it. Horrible experience.
Would it be safe to say then, Tim, that experience that you had might be part of why you're so open-minded to different ways of doing things and coming at problems from multiple approaches?
Absolutely, Jacob. No, yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, those are the experiences that kind of move you in a direction to say, man, why are they making this learning thing so awful? Because it is so interesting to not know the right answer, but yet be encouraged to dig at it, to learn. And so that to me was, wow, why would we ever shut learning off to kids, particularly when most kids are sitting there in some way, shape, or form going, man, I would love to actually be validated that I like to learn and give me the opportunity. So absolutely, Jacob, handing it over, man.
Very good, Tim. Johnny, same question to you, man. What was a negative experience you had as a student, and how did that inform the type of teacher you ended up becoming?
Well, I had many, many, many. And some of them, as I grew older, I learned were, you know, integral and part of discipline process. But I think the biggest ones that I learned that influenced the kind of teacher I became was, if you truly don't enjoy being around young people and people who are out there listening, who do this, they enjoy being around young people. They know that with that enjoyment and responsibility, it's built in that they're going to make mistakes. They're going to do things differently, like Tim experienced, or they're going to misbehave sometimes, because that's part of learning to behave. So I think the teachers that truly, you know, didn't show grace or patience, especially to students with needs. I was pretty empathetic and sensitive to the fact that, you know, I had teachers who, you know, singled students out, or who were, you know, put them down, or who, you know, didn't adapt things in the classrooms. They just didn't have any patience. And I get it. Sometimes we could be a real pain in the you know what as students, but it really stuck out to me. And when I decided to become a teacher, it was really clear to me the kind of teacher I didn't want to be, was someone who was going to be, you know, contributing to a person's life in a negative way. I think a lot of teachers don't always realize that they're doing that when they do it. So there's so many little instances, you know, where discipline wasn't disciplinary. It was more punishment. Mm. And it was more for the teacher's need than it was for the communication the young person I was in class with, or it was even myself, was communicating. It's like, hey, all behavior is a form of communication. And I understood that as a kid, mostly when my peers were getting in more trouble than I was, because I usually made a choice to get in trouble. But I was around kids who sometimes were getting in trouble for stuff. It was clear they had no control.
Yeah.
Right. How fast they could read a page or complete a math worksheet, you know? And so it always really bugged me that the teachers that weren't fair. Comes back to Tim's good experience. When teachers are real, I never really mind if a teacher shows emotion, gets upset. It's how they handle that. Do they have tools to be patient and understand that in this process, young people are supposed to make mistakes and they're communicating something to us? That doesn't mean that it's anything goes, because some of my favorite teachers could be categorized as strict, but everything they were strict about made sense, and they were for our own good. And they weren't about punishment as much as they were about discipline. So those instances really stuck with me. You know, the kind of meaningless punishments, like, hey, you're going to miss part of recess. Why? You know, because you didn't do X, Y, or Z. It's like, these things aren't connected. So later on, Jacob, when I was becoming a teacher, I learned about the importance of natural consequences that help prepare you for life. Like, if a teacher could have said, hey, you're going to have to spend 5 minutes of your recess finishing this task, because it's an important task, would have made more sense to me other than a punishment. You're going to miss some time at recess. So it's sometimes just about the adult's ability to stay regulated and communicate the natural consequence for the behaviors that young people are having. And remember, teachers out there, as frustrating as it gets, and I've been there, right? We can get frustrated. We're human. Young people are supposed to be making mistakes, right? And so it's really those instances where, you know, I thought teachers kind of lost connection to that. Why we're all here as a community, you know, is to learn to be better adults. We're not adults yet. So I that kind of stuck with me, Jacob, as I was learning to be a teacher. I kind of reminded myself, you know, I'm going to be that teacher who's there for the good and the bad, you know, who's real, like Tim said. Sometimes I'll get frustrated, but I want to make sure my consequences, or like how I structure a classroom, is all connected to natural consequences and make sense and are communicated to the person. And if it's something they're not choosing to do, like it's something like outside of their means, I'm going to try and figure out a way to make that learning environment work for that young person. So that was kind of too much of my school experience, was if it didn't work for that teacher, you got sent down to the principal's office, or you were out in the hall, you know, or you were disciplined on the spot by that teacher into usually some form of submission. And Tim alluded to this, like guilt or shame, or even in its worst case, I think equally as worse, just outright verbal abuse that too often I witnessed as a student and experienced, that hopefully nowadays is fewer and further between for young people. But I know it's out there. So, and it's tough to be a teacher. So it's a daily practice to remember, hey, kids are supposed to make mistakes. That's why we have school, right? To learn to be better adults. We're not adults yet. So let's get there.
So for all of our listeners out there, for everybody who's ever learned from you two gentlemen, I think we can say that we have some teachers out there, good and bad, to thank for turning you guys into the educators that you ended up becoming.
Absolutely.
Especially, man. Mr. LaMotta.
Yeah. Oh.
I would say. But Dr. Tim Slecker, Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, the best guests to ever go on their own show. I have to say it again. I have to say it every time because it's so true. I've enjoyed talking to you guys. We're coming to the end of the producer's choice here on Friday, but there's one thing that we do at the end of every producer's choice show, and that is our very special 60-second segment. Let's go! So we're talking about you guys back in the 20th century, talking about what shaped and molded you guys. One thing I think shaped and molded both of you, I'm sure, is Hulk Hogan, who tragically passed away last week. I know we all have a lot of thoughts on it, so we're going to start with Dr. Tim Slecker. 60 seconds, what are your thoughts on Hulk Hogan and what he meant to you as a little Tim?
Oh, the Hulkster, Hulkamania, Hulkster, yeah, WrestleMania. When he came to prominence from a bad guy to a good guy, when he picked up Andre the Giant and body slammed him to take over the World Wrestling Federation at the time, the WWF, and became the champion of all champions, the Hulkster right there. That was special, man. Those moments, you know, things happen. Wherever he decided to take things and move in a direction, for me, picking up Andre the Giant, moving from bad guy to good guy, what a great example right there. Hulkster, thanks for that moment.
That is a tremendous transition for Hulk Hogan, going from bad to good, and we can all do that when we've made mistakes. We can all be Hulk Hogans and become better. And Tim, I like the beginning of your answer, where you were like Kaiser Soze looking around that room. Hulk Hogan, wrestler, wrestling, WrestleMania. I think we all remember that part. Johnny, I want to hear your answer too. What did Hulk Hogan mean to little Johnny in 60 seconds?
Well, Jacob, I'm glad that you asked me about little Johnny, because big Johnny wasn't a big fan, obviously, folks, like what we know about Hulk Hogan's politics and his, you know, vocal racism and all those things.
He turned heel again later in life.
Yeah. So for Hulkamaniacs out there, let's revert back to, like Jacob said, our young years. Man, I was a big wrestling fan. Again, Tim, what stands out in my mind is that epic moment when he did body slam the biggest man I'd ever seen in my life on television or anything. You know, Andre the Giant was near and dear to my heart as a wrestler and even as an actor, right? And all those great ways that he contributed in the ways he did. But, you know, I loved wrestling. Hulk was certainly part of it. You know, the whole epic drama of the oh, yeahs and all the, you know, extra hyperbole. you know, it wouldn't, I teach that way. I talk that way. And I just wish that in that later part of his life, which probably was with him the whole way, but I wish that he wasn't, you know, remembered and known for being a racist. So, hey, if you're a racist out there, change your ways.
There you go.
So we don't remember you like we have to remember the Hulkster. But yeah, man, you know, let's still rest in some peace, but let us learn in those final lessons, you know, correct your ill ways, because you'll be remembered for them. How you treat people around you, even when there aren't cameras on you, stays with us. So that's my big thing. Like, still a fan of wrestling, want to remember those highlights of Hulkster. But come on, man, you know, can't co-sign on the bad stuff.
I think that is the big lesson from today for educators, for students. All the little hoagies need to know that once you turn good, don't turn bad again later on in life, or people will not like you anymore. Overall, guys, really good show. Great talking with you. Tim, Johnny, always happy to have you. But Tim, I think there's time for one last thing.
Yeah, now it's time for your moment of zen. I started studying history with one view in mind, to look for answers to the issues and problems I saw in the world about me.
Thanks for listening to today's Producer's Choice. And if you want more Busted Pencils podcast, well, you can head on over to Apple, Spotify, or you can always find us at civicmedia.com or on our website, bustedpencils.com. And remember, you can always find great Busted Pencils content every Monday for homeroom, Wednesdays for class in session, and on Fridays for the Producer Jacob's Choice, like today's show. And of course, Pencil Busters, don't forget about Saturdays and listen to us as we drop our weekend broadcast every 3 p.m. Central Time across all the Civic Media networks for 1 hour of your favorite blue collar scholars, Tim and Johnny, and keep busting pencils.